Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. The last of the ice sank into the lake here this last week, and the spring rains came, and what a blessing they were. They really greened up this town, and life just got brighter and brighter. And the spring cleaning got underway, this annual ritual. So interesting, people clearing out the effluvia, the flotsam, and the jetsam of their lives. One of those times in the year when you look around and you are disgusted by yourself, and you look around and you resolve to change all of this incredible accumulation of crap. Where did this come from? So you load it into big boxes and you drive out to the dump in Lake Wobegon, and you hurl this out, and you notice that other people are watching what you throw away. And sometimes one person's crap is another person's treasure. And here's a big box of old shoes, and you hurl them out there, and somebody sees a pair of shoes they think could be repaired, and they run out and they snatch them up off this pile of awful, and they bring them in. Maybe it's true that you can't really understand another person until you've walked a mile in a pair of shoes that they have tried to throw away, but nonetheless, interesting exercise. People alarmed at what they have accumulated inside. What are we doing with all these books by Alfred Payson Terhune, these 30, 40 novels about collie dogs who've come to the rescue of people? We got over this when we were 13 years old. We're never going to read these, so throw them out. People ask themselves these questions in spring. Why do we spend so much time taking care of this lawn and keeping the lines all straight and neat and reseeding the bare spots and pulling the dandelions and picking up the dog poop? Why do we do this? Why spend your life on the ornamental? Why don't we bring in just boulders, just big rocks, and pile them around in some interesting way and plant prairie grass out there and just let the neighbors deal with it? That's all. And we can devote ourselves to something constructive, after all, like writing that family history that we've been thinking about writing all these years and transcribing those tapes of those old people who sat around the kitchen table nattering years ago. Remember that? You recorded them with the Wallensack tape recorder, and you've got all of that reel-to-reel tape. Aunt Lois is there, and Uncle Louie, and they're talking about great-grandpa Powell, who was a real progressive way back in the 1880s, and who believed in the equal educational opportunity for women, which was unusual in Charles City, Iowa at the time. Why don't we write up this stuff? Lois, she was amazing. She was Lutheran. Lutherans are brought up to take care of people with problems, but not necessarily to marry them. But she got involved with Louis, and she married him, a man with no common sense and no real skills. And of all of the dumb things in the catalog of stupidity, he did most of them, and he was interested in doing all of the others as well. But he was a good storyteller. You sat him in a room with other people, and if everybody was quiet for about 10 minutes, he would start in to tell you a story about his grandfather who came over from Norway. They had nothing whatsoever. They had to work so hard. They had to work like animals from before dawn until after dark out in the fields, and then they had supper, and then they got drunk, and then they played baseball out in a hayfield that had been mown. They went out there and they built a big bonfire, and that was home plate, and the batter stood on one side and right by the fire, and the pitcher stood out in the dark, and he threw the ball in as hard as he could. And if you were lucky enough to get a hit, you were well advised to take your bat with you, because there were no rules regarding the humane treatment of base runners. The fielders were all out there in the dark, and the game was never over until there was a big fight and people rolling around and kicking and gouging and biting on the grass. And then they all came in, and the next night they did it all again. That's why these Norwegians grew up so stubborn and mean, you know. I remember when Uncle Louie died and Aunt Lois, we sat there by the open casket, a Norwegian wake, very quiet, and just only coffee was served. And after a while, she said, "Well, you know, I think he was a good Democrat at heart," which she said to make sure that he was dead. Because, of course, he was a diehard Republican going way, way back. And once we knew that he was dead, then, you know, we could talk about him and all those old Norwegians who came over. And that was why he was such a rough character. He was mean. He was never mean to Lois, because she was a big woman. She looked like she was built out of sandbags. And so he never pushed her around, and she protected the kids. She told him once that she loved him, and that confused him and made him think that she was insane. And that really was what protected her. We should write all of this down, shouldn't we? We should find those tapes. And yet, now that I mention it, I have a feeling that we took that box of tapes out to the dump about about 3 years ago, and we hurled them out, and nobody ran out to rescue them. So it's a lost cause. And meanwhile, we rake the lawn and we lay down fertilizer, because we remember other people who let their lawns go wild. And it was for one reason, because they were drunks. And that's a club that we don't want people to think we are a member of. And so we go work on our lawns, even though we don't want to. Clint Bunsen looked at his lawn the other day, and he thought, you know, I could hire a kid to do all of this for me. Why not? He thought, well, because that's why not. If they don't see you out there mowing your lawn, they will assume that you have terminal cancer. And they will come and they will bring you hot dishes that you don't want to eat. And they will bring you flowers, and they will sit and look at you with big watery eyes. And if you were a drunk, they will read to you from the Epistle to the Romans. And that's not how you want to spend your afternoon. So you take care of your lawns so people will not visit you and find out what's going on. Anyway, the ice is gone and the grass is green, and Pastor Liz gave her last sermon Easter Sunday at Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church. Now she's off to Rome to take over the pastorate at Zion Lutheran Church on the Piazza Navona, which she realizes now she expressed much too fully her great pleasure at leaving Lake Wobegon and going off to be a Lutheran pastor in Rome, talking about how much she was looking forward to it. That was not a good move on her part. She was supposed to seem sad to go, but it's too late to take it back. And now 6 parishioners have given her a clipping from the Good Life magazine, which is an article by a woman who went and lived in Rome for 3 years, and she describes it, the roar of traffic and the mopeds running up and down on the sidewalk, and drivers are crazy, and nobody signals, and all of the cars have big dents in them, and that ought to tell you something. And men are staring at you, and they're commenting on you if you are a woman, and maybe even if you are a man, and shopkeepers are ripping you off left and right, and there's graffiti and dog poop and garbage everywhere you look, and the buses are all running late, and the subway are packed with people, and you stand there, and this hand reaches around, and a man grabs your butt, and it stores closed for 3 hours every afternoon, and lousy internet, and no peanut butter anywhere in Rome whatsoever, and children are spoiled rotten, and if you go to the post office just to mail a letter first class, you better take a look at the clerks behind the counter and choose yours carefully, because if that clerk is in a bad mood, this could take 2 hours. It honestly could, and you'd have to fill out forms, and you might even have to come back tomorrow. No, she came back from Rome, this woman, and she spent 3 months in a mental institution. They gave this big article to Pastor Liz. And so her sermon on Easter Sunday was about the excitement of facing new challenges and how this stimulates spiritual growth, which we don't believe for one minute, and we hope that she does not either. And meanwhile, the snowbirds are returning, which is a pain. People coming back from Arizona and New Mexico, Florida and Texas, people who were lounging around on a beach and backyards on chaise longues while we were maintaining life here on the frozen tundra. They come back and they look at us and they say, "I understand it was a pretty dreadful winter." "No, no," we say, no, it was not. No, they exaggerate these things in the newspapers. It was a beautiful winter. It was absolutely easy, just gorgeous. We got some snapshots. We'll show you this. It was great pleasure when the Magan dancers came back from Phoenix and they discovered that the pipes had burst in their upstairs bathroom and a raccoon was living in the laundry room and had chewed through a great deal of electrical circuitry and so forth. Great Schadenfreude about the troubles of the snowbird. Schadenfreude, look it up sometime and then practice it in your own life. Little buds on the trees, and the rhubarb is up and it's growing, and the birds are on the feeder, and you can hear frogs in the evening, and so life resumes. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are above average.